From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome to another episode of this show. Welcome filmmakers, actors, writers, and especially editors today to another episode of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. This is a special episode of this show that was recorded live at UCB East about a week in the past as we are launching this. And it's with our friends from the New York Television Festival, which we always love to do a show with them because great folks come out to watch the show that we do live. We get great panelists and hopefully it's something that's really beneficial for you, especially if you are applying to NYTVF. And if you're getting this episode as it's hot off the presses, there is a deadline coming for New York Television Festival. Their 2017 festival's IPC, Independent Pilot Competition, deadline is June the 28th. So there still is time to get those submissions in. And they were kind enough to ask us to host a panel about comedy editing. Recorded here in the month of June, I think because there are so many folks out there right now who are in the post-production phase for their NYTVF submissions. So they wanted to get all those people in a room and sort of like give them some information on how to like cram it all in and get the submission in before the deadline, which is great of them. And we are happy to be participant in that. And we got a lot of tips and tricks and tools for what we've called getting the most in post, specifically for editing your work to maximize comedy in post-production, which is a subject that I love to talk about and could definitely talk about for hours on end. This episode featured a panel of comedy editing experts. We had folks, Nick Mugis joined us. He's an old UCB hand from way back in the day, and he's edited almost every popular show that features like UCB alumni in the world. Broad City, Gethard Show. He's also an editor for Amy Schumer. Really accomplished comedy editor. Tessa Greenberg came back and joined us. She's a former guest on this show and the former head of post at UCB, so she's definitely done a lot of comedy editing around this space, and she's an NYTVF alum. And her old buddy, Ed Mundy, who, if you don't know Ed, you have definitely seen his work because he does VFX for almost every comedy show in the biz, Louie and Broad City and Schumer, and he was an animator on Archer, and right now he's the in-house sort of like graphics guy at Sam B. All sorts of stuff, editing and specifically focus on VFX, and we got that perspective. And we were rounded out on the panel by our good buddy Ian Thake from the New York Television Festival. He's the director of programming there, so he lends his perspective on the festival side and on a producer side to like how the sort of editing tricks and tools like apply towards the kind of programming that he sees. And his sort of like expertise of like seeing the whole field of like, I mean, God, that's got to be an incredible learning position to sort of see the broad slate of stuff that comes in at NYTVF. So Ian joined us as well. So a real great panel that I tried not to screw up too much. Joined me for a conversation about editing, which is obviously better than just talking about editing all by yourself. And speaking of not being alone, Sophie Alkeesian is here. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, Nate. How are you?
Sophie, you're not Ben Hosley. This is weird.
I'm really not.
So for those of you who don't know, the UCB Comedy Podcast Network here in New York has been without a producer in New York City for the last couple of weeks. That's over. Sophie is here. Welcome, Sophie.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here. Very excited to get started.
Yeah, I mean, we're throwing you right into it. We gave you a fun one. Sophie was here for the Career Tracker episode last week, which is a fun one to sort of get started with. A lot of moving pieces to that one.
Yeah, it was also really inspiring to see the dedication and how much time and commitment people were putting into their careers. Yeah. And all the different points they were at.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it was definitely an interesting point to chat with those folks, and we're really excited that you're here and know that you're going to get a lot of comedy sort of like comedy podcast work experience.
Yes,
which you've already been doing as
yes.
well.
Yes.
Sophie, this is the part of the show where we normally sort of talk about something in the news or mm-hmm. something relevant to the business right now.
Yeah, what's happening?
And I don't know if you saw this, but Netflix just started canceling shows. Did you see these stories?
I did not see this. I'm pretty disappointed. I have loved everything Netflix puts out.
I mean, it's two shows that were you a fan of Sense8?
You know what? Take it back.
Maybe not everything that they put out. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, it's the ones that I haven't seen. Sense8 and The Get Down are the two that they have canceled.
And it's funny because those are two that I really tried, dug in, and I was like, no, this isn't working for me.
I mean, and I also think that there's some of the more expensive projects that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Sense8, I mean, the Wachowskis, I believe that that's a pretty expensive show. And I think The Get Down is also like not, it's a period piece. I think there's mm-hmm. like a lot of expense to it. Netflix only does expensive stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that they are now saying that they are giving up on shows or sort of like, easing them out. They used to be the place that was, bringing back shows.
Yeah.
Right? Reunion yeah. shows, Arrested Development and Full House and all these shows that like.
Totally.
We all thought were dead. They brought them back. And the question is, where do these shows go now? Right?
Yeah.
Who's going to snatch them up? But interesting to see it happen because I'm of the mindset, I still think that the Netflix, as folks out there might know, Netflix is in a bit of a weird position in that like they need to keep growing their subscriber base in mm-hmm. order to make the money work long term. So like there's an impending sort of pyramid scheme of Netflix that might hit the, shit hit the fan a little further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if maybe this is in part to try to hedge that a little bit. Right.
Yeah, I think that's a fair guess because it would work like any other TV network, but with such specific kind of standards.
Yeah, but it's definitely something new, and mm-hmm. it also is maybe them starting to admit that they don't have an endless pile of cash to pull from. But I still kind of wonder if we're going to hit this point sometime down the line when the house of cards. Literally and figuratively topples over. ironic that that's their show, right?
Yeah.
But and interesting to sort of see maybe this is a precursor to some of that coming
out. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so curious to sort of keep an eye on that and all the sort of trends of this business. And welcome, Sophie. Excited to have you here every week and to have chats about the news just like that with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Nate.
Let's turn to today's episode, which again was our NYTVF comedy editing panels. Really excited to jump into this one. And while we listen to it, Sophie and I are going to enjoy a Bronx beer. Bronx, of course, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. After this show, I sample for the first time the Bronx Summer Beer. Which, Sophie, I don't know if you've
Ooh.
Tried that one. It's a delicious beer.
I have not. Is it, what is it, fruity?
It is seasonal.
Seasonal,
is light and their website says light and refreshing, brewed with citrus hops and dried lemon peel. So it's very refreshing on a hot day. Let's go have one right now while we listen to this. Our NYTVF comedy editing panel. So you just heard out there a lot more Adobe Premiere, Adobe Creative Cloud suite stuff. What do you guys, like? I guess let's maybe start there, is what do you guys use in the post-production? What are your go-to tools that we're talking about with y'all? Tessa, you want to start out?
Yeah, Adobe Premiere, Creative Cloud primarily. Creative Suite. Mostly Premiere. Every now and then, I'm mainly an editor. Every now and then I'll go into After Effects to dabble. Yeah.
What about you, Ed?
I use Adobe Creative Cloud. I'm mostly an After Effects guy, so I do mostly visual effects, motion graphics.
And for you right now, Ed, are you what's your balance between edit and visual effects these days in terms of like your workload? Is it mostly visual effects?
Yeah, it's about 95% visual effects.
Okay, cool. What about you, Nick?
I do a lot of Avid, actually, because a lot of shows that I work on are multiple seat shows. You know, like a lot of editors work on the same kind of stuff. Avid is still a lot better at that. But when I do short films, I do my own stuff, and definitely music videos. I love Premiere. I love After Effects a lot, too.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, and especially in terms of like the TV stuff. Avid is still such a dominant tool in that sort of TV editing environment. What about you, Ian? Are you like you
I don't edit. No, okay. I use an editor as my that is
just
funny.
An editor. Okay.
Yes.
Right. So we had talked before we came out here a little bit about talking about the difference between editing for yourself and editing for other people, right? So let's maybe like draw a line there and segment this conversation into two parts, because I think that a lot of folks who are here tonight are probably the folks who are editing their own work or editing work on a very tight creative team for this New York Television Festival deadline or for those kind of small projects. So let's maybe speak to that approach right out of the gate. So in terms of like working in that environment and in working in like trying to like pull comedy out of an edit, what is the difference for you guys in the way that you approach the project when it is editing for self versus editing as part of a job?
Cool. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of differences. I think the main thing is when you're editing a project for yourself, there's no client that you have to adhere to. So more so than ever, I believe that you should try and make yourself laugh and you should try and impress yourself. And even though it's really good to ask for feedback and have, you know, good conversations with people you trust or strangers for that matter, it doesn't mean that you need to listen to what everyone says. I think editing something for yourself is the one chance you get to have where you just do whatever the hell you want. And it can be hard sometimes when you get feedback and people say, like, I'm not sure this worked, but sometimes it's more important to just go with your gut. Other times it's important to listen to people. It's that balance, but make yourself laugh.
Yeah, I mean, and that's creatively. Is there any, because you mentioned also, Nick, that there's a tool difference even.
Oh, for sure, for
so
sure.
You're using a different set of editing tools when it's for yourself versus
job. No question of that. Like the idea of like, and I don't want to go into this part of it because, but working for producers and establishing communication rapport and all that kind of stuff, like that's really important as an editor who works professionally.
Yeah.
But when I work on my own stuff, like I just like to be weird, like really crazy. Like I don't like to adhere to anybody. I don't like to talk to people. Like I'll just like go off the grid, like hook a projector up. I have a few cats and a wife and we just kind of like, they know what it is. And that's kind of what you can do with Premiere. And that's really cool. Sometimes I would get in trouble when I had to do something that was like super creative in my brain, but I needed to do it in a professional environment. And it's like, I'll have like all the doors closed, like it's at home and it's not at home. You know what I mean? So there's definitely that kind of a vibe, but I feel like Avid, not to talk about Avid, more like Premiere is more of a, it's a thing that if you know how to use a computer on your own, Premiere is very easy to just kind of like handle the way that you would use your computer normally. And I think that that's kind of why people like it. It's like what Final Cut used to be in terms of like the OS being part of it.
Okay. What about for you, Ed? Is there a difference between those two environments?
Yeah, I think it's a very different mindset. If I'm working on someone else's project, I'm following the directions very closely, trying to get exactly what it is that's in the script. And then we can start talking about changes to make. Whereas if I'm working on my own project, I probably, even before we finished shooting, I was already thinking of things that I'm cutting out, that I'm not adhering to the original idea, changing things along the way.
In what ways do you guys feel like you take more chances in the edit when it's your own stuff? I mean, I would imagine, Ed, for you, doing your own stuff and editing with a visual effects mindset is an opportunity to try things that you probably haven't tried before, right? Trying to push yourself in new ways when you're working on stuff that is a little bit more liberated creatively.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. When I'm working on my own projects, I will sometimes sort of build the entire thing around some visual effect or something visual I want to achieve, and then like we can build a web video around that.
Build the project around that sort of experimentation.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I find the same, like you can really enjoy going down a rabbit hole, you know, when you're editing by yourself, like more so than when you're on a deadline or a budget with producers. It's like a lot of times, like they'll have a specific idea of exactly what they want, like Ed said. And so when they come in to watch it and you're like, oh no, but I used all the B-roll that you guys shot to make like this montage. And it's like, it's really funny. And they're like, no, you're fired. You know, it's like straight up. But like you could do that at home all day long. And like, you could have a great time doing that. So I try to be more free, you know, when I'm working on my own projects. But then the flip side of that is that you don't hold yourself to any sort of deadlines. And I get in trouble a lot when it's my own stuff.
When it comes to deadlines.
No question.
So it might be helpful to have some sort of submission deadline for your projects, huh?
I mean, incredibly helpful.
What's the balance there then between, because maybe you spoke to this a little bit, Tessa. It's also a matter of when working for yourself, especially in an edit, right? You give yourself the latitude to be like, I'm the one doing all of this. I have to develop this workflow that's maybe experimental. I have to put in all the work that makes all the choices. And I want to have the ultimate sort of like say on the creative contribution, but you're also trying to communicate something, right? Where is the line for you guys on your own projects in taking feedback that is like the stuff you're taking chances on? Where's the balance between where is it not communicating effectively, like what the joke is or what, you know what I mean? What the mission of the project is versus like,
making a choice that's just pleasing for yourself?
I think that's a really good question. And you said it, you have to know what the mission of your project is. It's really difficult to go into something and try and figure out why it's funny if you don't already know before you shot it. So every shot that's in your edit needs to serve the mission. It has to earn its way in. And this is something we talk about a lot at UCB, yeah, is like, and I will talk more about this later, like killing your darlings. Every line of dialogue, every sound cue, every music cue has to earn its way in there and has to serve that mission. So really being specific about what it is. And if you're having a hard time, like let's say it's unscripted and you're trying to figure out what is the meat, like what is the fun here? That's where you can open it up to a conversation and maybe figure out with your friends and colleagues, like what the hell it is, because that happens sometimes. But yeah, know your shit.
You must see stuff that sort of is on that line, Ian, right? Because when people are submitting stuff that is to the festival, they are independent projects. They are self-directed, self-funded often projects that are about a creative expression. Yep. When you guys are looking at stuff, how much of that line between like taking creative choices and wanting to reward that versus like having something that is communicating?
Yeah, I think we 100% want to... We want to be excited about a project. And so creative choices like that are just such a clear way to get, it's just a shorthand to be like, oh, there's a voice here. Like you never want to sort of over edit or edit to someone else's expectations, especially when you're creating your own work where suddenly you've created like Friends and you're like, great, this is a really great episode of Friends, but but also, you know, the creators of Friends could have made this.
So I shouldn't submit my re-edited
series. You know, honestly, it would be pretty cool. I think to Tessa's point and sort of communicating effectively, like, I think that's the sort of balance, because oftentimes if you open up your work to other people and they have notes, the notes aren't going to be like, oh, you're not communicating this fully. It'll be like, oh, I don't like this moment. And you're like, oh, but I love it. And so instead of being like, I need to cut this moment out, it's like, what didn't get communicated that didn't get a person to the same point that I'm at, because I was there when it was shooting. So I know all these hilarious moments behind it. Like, is there a way to get the audience to that point that I'm at through the edit instead of like, sure, cutting out this thing I love? And because notes can be really damaging, because it seems like they hate everything you've done. So it's like to step back and be like, oh, they just don't love it because I haven't done this yet, or whatever the case may be. And I think that's what, it's difficult, but that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I can dig that. Do you guys as editors and as creatives have any sort of like comedy, you know, doctrine to your editing style? Like, for example, I've heard several times that college humor has an editing doctrine that is like, be on the face of the person who is speaking, right? That's their comedy workaround. We're working in short form. We're working in stuff that's supposed to be like punchy and quick. Get in, get the laugh, get out. And so much of that, to communicate that in an edit style, is like, be on their face when they're saying it. Anything like that in your work creatively?
Yes. A lot of times you have that. A lot of times you have different styles depending on what kind of shows you have. I find that you never really want to do anything super proprietary like that exact thing where it's like every time you're on something, because I think that kind of like stifles whatever you shot, you know? But that being said, that's like a really easy way to make people kind of like understand what they're going for and what understand like getting everything into one specific style. But like I do a lot of it depends. I broke in sketch, and so I did a lot of parody work, and parody work is always sold by how, especially now digital stuff and with visual, you know, effects, how close you can get it to what it's trying to parody. And so that means that like instead of being a comedy editor, like I became like a recreation editor, or like I learned how to edit like the Criss Angel show, you know, or like, right, you know, and like those things, like kind of like, you know, with parody and also with short film, you kind of, those are the things that you kind of want to go with, I think, in terms of everything. I feel like has its own proprietary kind of style.
So your editing style is part of that comedic expression. You're, yeah, mimicking the style of the thing you're parodying to heighten the comedy.
Exactly. Like you can't, at one level, like you can't change the footage, but on another level, you can do so much to exactly heighten what you're trying to, what the mission of the piece is. You can heighten it through editing. Obviously, if something is trying to be frenetic, you can be more breakneck. You know, if something is more languid, if you think that the jokes need to land, depending on how your performers are, you know, like you might know a stand-up that has more of kind of like an easy cadence, and you want to follow that kind of flow. And then like you'll be editing somebody like Schumer, who's really punchy, or like Rachel Feinstein, who's like super punchy, and then you want to just like go with their vibe. Like, as an editor, like I'm only always trying to go with the vibe of what people give me. You know, that's all I can do.
What about for either of you guys? Any doctrine you hold yourself to, Ed? You seem like a real dogmatic guy.
No, I think the same thing is true to what you were saying graphically. If you're doing a parody of something, the closer you can get the visuals to that original thing, the better that's going to support the comedy. That creates your baseline that then you can do the twist that makes it funny.
Okay. I'll add one, because this is something that I feel strongly about. I like in the edit to have a lot of punchy, especially in sketch, a lot of punchy various reaction shots.
Yeah.
A lot of times on set, I will get just a minute of reaction shots that are meant to just be like, hold, change, like slightly, some sort of like tick, so that you can punch a joke if it's not selling in the edit with that reaction shot as like a hack towards like, this is where the punchline's supposed to be, even if the performance doesn't sell it.
I've reactions are like sort of like a signal to the audience in a lot of ways to be like, this is what's funny. Like,
yeah,
you are that person in my mind as I'm editing it, you know? So I love that. I mean, I've saved so many things with reactions off the side. Like, it's crazy. Reactions are the best.
There's nothing quite like that with like a visual effects. Like, are you ever punching up jokes with like visual effect choices that get made in the edit that weren't intended in production? Or no? I imagine that'd be harder.
I think that probably happens. I can't think of an example off the top of my head. I mean, you can always just end something by blowing up someone's head.
Great. Okay, there's a hack right there. Blow up someone's head. Problem solved. And Tessa, you and I have talked a lot about this technique, or this sort of like hack towards comedy, which is the sort of music editing that punches jokes.
Yeah.
And you're really good at that.
Thanks. Yeah, music is my boyfriend, my girlfriend in editing. We're close. Yeah, I think music can make or break a piece. Finding the right piece of music and then editing the music in addition to the footage, editing the music to go with the footage, can really change something. The way it drops out, the way it comes in, if it's percussive versus just melodic and with harmony and stuff. And you have to audition a lot of different music styles before you decide on the one. Like, I think early on in my editing, I was like, I'll try this song because I like it, which was a little bit more arbitrary, not thinking, well, this song doesn't actually work for the piece. For some people, music editing comes more naturally. For others who maybe don't have a musical background, there are still ways to learn how to edit music by looking at the waveform, where, you know, the apexes and the rises and the falls. So there's many ways to go about it. But yeah, I mean, it just sets such a tone. It's so fun. I mean, my background is in music videos. So for me, that was just kind of where I came from. But I feel like we've probably all had the experience where we just hear a song we like and we're like, oh man, I want to write a film that I use that song in or whatever. Like, it changes the emotional feeling behind everything. So for me, that's the really fun part. When I get handed a project and I'm like, yeah, I add music to it, I'm like, you got it. So like, that's just like, download as many, you know, royalty-free can't shitty tracks as possible until you find the one and go to
town. It also seems though that a lot of people first starting out in editing don't realize how much music editing they have to do to sell, especially a comedy piece.
Oh yeah, sketch wise amazingly so.
Yeah,
the way that I was taught sketch a million years ago by the people who started these theaters is like that good sketches are like pop songs, and like you have to have a hook and you have to have a way in and out. And if a good sketch is like a pop song, then why not have good music helping reinforce that the whole way through? It's like a major thing. Especially too, when you're a lot of the stuff that you work on, like one of the only ways you can really convey a feel that doesn't exist in the footage that you have is through music. And so you really have to, like, I mean, I love that too. It's my favorite thing to do, is like dig through crates and try to find songs. And I remember like 4 o'clock in the morning, once I found like a Diana Ross song and I put it on the moon, and it was crazy. Like, you do stuff like that and you're just like, this is the best career. Being a music supervisor is awesome. I want to do it.
And you can use many different tracks. Like if you're editing a 2 to 3 minute sketch or a 5 minute web series, don't limit yourself to one song. You know, change it up in between. And I mean, it helps to have the same style of music throughout. But I think the more cues that you can that serve the piece, going back to like if it serves the piece, the better.
Can I just say one other thing? I was like, a lot of my style is like exactly what we were talking about with waveform editing and like looking at the waveform and figuring it out. Like a lot of what I find funny and how to make things funny is through syncopation and repetition. And that requires like a lot of beat looping and things of that nature. And I think that, again, I keep going back to like window dressing to heighten something, but it's like that's the whole thing. Like sometimes you could find the rhythm of a piece through a musical cue that you never knew about.
It's and amazing. You're looking for ways to manipulate that song to heighten when the sort of like comedy of the piece heightens
right,
too.
Exactly,
and
exactly.
That might require looping or cutting up sections or using stuff from the end and the beginning and sort of like doing that kind of music Frankenstein.
Yeah. Like I once did a thing where, these two characters in a show made a lot of money really fast and I got to use a Drake song and it's like, I'm going to make Drake say, yeah, like on a downbeat. Like,
yeah.
It's going to happen because I get to choose Drake's voice for 1 second. I get. To
Did you have the stems, like all the individual?
No, they wouldn't give me that. Oh, my God.
That
if
been
I
cool.
had that, I would probably be still working on
Remix.
It now and it wouldn't have come out. So, yeah, that stuff is crazy. But when you get to do it, it's awesome.
I imagine there's also a version of that that relates to the sort of sound, you know, sound editing for visual effects, too, right? If you're working on something that is like visual effects heavy to sell a joke, if you don't have the right sort of like sound elements to sell the things that you're creating visually, it's not going to have the impact.
I think that that's something that gets overlooked a lot too. Sometimes I'll create or I'll do some sort of motion graphic or visual effect and it happens before the sound mix stage of the process. And sometimes I see the final product and the sound is more or less what it was in the rough cut. And then sometimes someone takes it and adds sounds that, you know, maybe it's just like beeps when a light flashes that wasn't there before in the rough cut. And it can make what I did actually seem really good where it was just okay. Mm-hmm. It's like sound is really important to sell that sort of thing.
I mean, I think we kind of forget that in a medium where things can be shot. So we were even talking about that, like, Musical.ly app before we came out here. Things can be shot using tools of, like, the digital age that make high production value out of what is a phone, low production value. But so much of the kind of communication towards story and filmmaking has to do with that soundscape generation that isn't there in real life and that you have to do manually in an edit.
You got
to
watch stuff too. Like watch it with your eyes closed. I mean, that sounds dumb, but like sketch, like when you're done with your piece, like listen to it only audio and see if anything bumps you because if something bumps your audio wise, it's very hard to recover visually. And that is the exact polar opposite. If you have smooth audio, you can do almost anything to video. Like I've had music videos where like literally I've had the crew in the background with like ladders and it's working because the cut's there and the music's there and nobody notices anything.
So you'll look at a cut without like you'll close your eyes and watch a cut.
Absolutely.
Down. That's a regular practice.
I will not lie, not on like Moshe Kasher's hour long talk show, but like on like a sketch every single time, you know, like on like a 22 minute thing, I do that as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean like TV's visual obviously, but people just don't look at their TV that closely when they're like, it's like people watch a short video, even a 5 minute video, and they're probably phased out for at least a third of it. Like they're not, you know, nobody really just like clues in and just, but like, you're always listening to it. I think like it's really hard, like you said, to sort of recover from sort of sound issues or just like just a weird sound choice, which is such a strong, such a vague thing to say. But I think sound is crazy important. It's kind of, and something people forget about.
I can dig it. And this sort of like dovetails into, I want to ask about like working on stuff for other people, right? The sort of like, not your creative baby, but like somebody that's editing for a job and for someone else's vision. As it relates to sound choices and stuff like that, also, here's a question. Where do you, like, how much of that do you do in the sort of rough cut phase? If you're showing somebody a cut of something that's theirs, how much in the process of building like a first rough do you worry about mix, visual effects, like elements or plating or sort of like, you know, any sort of soundscaping? Like how much of that do you do there? When does that come into the process?
I mean, this is, again, such a proprietary question. But again, for the audience and like towards the more, I would say, like auteur style of things where like the Broad City Girls be in the room all the time and like Schumer would be around every day. It's really tricky. You have to find like a way that like sort of establishes what they want sound wise. Because I definitely, to answer your first part of the question, I always do a sound mix.
Always.
If it's got to have jokes in it, I'm trying to make the timing work, even if I don't have the right sounds. Yeah. If I don't have, it's just I've got to feel it out, or else the edit won't be right. So, but then that being said, you know, you can't take huge off the cuff risks with people unless they know you hardcore and they're willing to like walk down a long road with you. And a lot of times on a TV show where somebody is writing it and producing it and directing it and, you know, doing promo for it while they edit it, they don't really want to see a lot of, you know, your left turns unless they're the most amazing left turns. Like if you can also score once and then have the latitude to do whatever you want for a whole project. And that's kind of fun too. So,
yeah. What about you guys?
Yeah. I would consider a rough cut of something. It's not just a rough cut of picture. It's a rough cut of the music edit and of the sound edit. So essentially kind of piggybacking off of what you said, but I think you're also, if it's for a client, you're selling it and you wouldn't want to sell something that was half baked. So I try and get it, all the sound elements to at least 90%, you know, they're not perfect. It's not a perfect mix, but you can watch it and not cringe, you know, you don't want to get notes that's like, this feels awkward and slow. And you're like, yeah. Well, when we do, you know, sound effects and music later, it's like, there's no time for that, you know?
Yeah. That seems like the challenge, because you are putting something together that is a rough draft and a pass that is like early, but also, yeah, you're trying to sell what the joke of it is and what the pacing of it's going to feel like, so that it's not about having to scrap and you know what I mean? Move backwards. You want to be able to move forwards with it.
Right.
I
don't know. It's like, it depends really to the level of what's the word, nuance that you need to portray in a cut, in the first cut. Like sometimes you say working for other people. Now I talked about some of the most brilliant people that I've worked with that can do anything, but there are also a lot of producers that are not brilliant at anything and are really only kind of okay at watching TV. And so it's like, you have to kind of like give them stuff that is digestible for them and is not necessarily something that's going to bump them, because you're trying to get a joke across and maybe you half-assed the sound mix. And because of that, now the guy's like, well, I didn't really like that joke anyway. It sounds like the sound is kind of messed up. So forget, you know, like, it's like, that's how fast you lose stuff. Like it's almost immediate.
Yeah.
So you have to really try hard to get everything in there
and
that you want.
And define bump. Just because you've said it a few times, I just want to make sure it's super clear.
So like,
I love that phrase.
It's just like one of those, like, if something bumps someone in the edit room, it's something that's jarring to them, visually or sonically or whatever. I'm like a big believer in like shorthands to get through to clients, you know, like, and again, this is all, you guys are doing your own project, so whatever you do in your own head, that's what you do to get through to clients. But what I'm doing is like, I'm trying to figure out a way to talk to them and make it so that I understand that I know that they don't like it, or they know that I don't like it. And bump is one of those classic ones. Sometimes I hate a lot of them, you know, like people be like, split the difference, or can you like zhuzh it up a little bit, or like put gel in it, like a hairdresser. It's like, I can't do any of that, you know, but it is what it is.
I imagine, Ed, that it's slightly a different calculation with visual effects, where there's more sort of like baking time for something big to come together. How much of the final product do you show in a rough, and how much of it is necessarily sort of like rough renders, and you know what I mean?
Usually I try to show a finished shot. Like there will be times where we're not quite sure what is going to go in this slot. We just know we have to get from this person's eyeball to this spaceship in outer space, and we have 4 seconds to do it. And in those cases, I will probably do something rough and say, here's the basic motion of it. Is that working? Should I spend 8 more hours on this?
Yeah. So where it's not possible to spend the time without it being like a day lost,
right.
It's something rough.
Yeah.
But everything under that, you are sort of like demonstrating what you hope is locked.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, at that point in the process, at least on a TV show or a film, they know what the shot is going to be. We know it's going to be 4 seconds long or 8 seconds long, and it's just they're looking for any mistake that's in it. You know, you're going to get notes on anything.
Okay. And in terms of like working with notes, that's another thing to ask about. How do you guys sort of like, you know, what's some advice for folks out there in terms of like taking notes on a project that isn't your own? How do you work with notes that are about like where you've fallen short on an edit or where the client is wrong on an edit? Like, how do you take notes and communicate back without getting fired?
I think it's really important to, from the very beginning, establish your workflow between the director, the editor, the producer, whoever's going to be giving notes. I think a great producer might say to an editor that they respect, how do you want to receive notes? But sometimes you don't always get that luxury. But at least having a conversation, like I often, if I'm getting notes from a company or a client or producer, I will try and say, hey, can you please send me time mark notes? And I'll almost give them an example of how I prefer to see notes with time code and everything. Whatever it is, establish how you're going to give notes back and forth before the note process starts. And be as specific as possible, because it's not about hurting someone's feelings. It's about making the best, you know, project possible. So a note that I absolutely hate is at 16 seconds, this doesn't work. I'm like, what doesn't work? You know, it's fine if you you don't think something specific doesn't work, but I can't do anything unless I know what the hell you're talking about. So being specific and then giving examples like, oh, I'm not feeling this music cue. That's fine. What do you have in mind? You know, so when giving notes to your editor, remember, you're on a team. You know, it's not like your idea versus them. You're trying to work together creatively to make the best product.
All that is 100,000% true. Also, tonality is really important. Like, I think that people that give me notes, and I don't want to say get into trouble, because you can't get into trouble when somebody's giving you a note. As an editor, you have to always be willing to take the note. You've got to be able to walk away from things. I literally, it's like the go bag and that, what's that, Breaking Bad, right? He has the go bag. So like, I have a goal. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to argue about this anymore. I'm out. Like, yeah. This is fine. So you have to know how to deal with that. But then there's also there's a strata too that I want to just like kind of get into that of like, there's creative notes, there's notes that you have with your editor, and then there's like outside world notes, like producery notes. And that's like a really important thing to understand how to navigate, because like the way that I get notes from a director on my rough cut is not something that I would expect to see from Comedy Central or from anyone from Viacom. I'm looking from them for timing things, changes, you know. So when they start giving me creative notes, that means that I didn't do my job. Like we didn't get the show to them the way that they need to see it. You know what I mean? And sometimes you also have things, and I don't want to get like too crazy about this, but like you'll just have like people who want to hit you with a note all the time because like it's like their job to like give you that note. Like that's how they justify their existence in the corporate world, you know? So it's like there's always going to be a dude who's like, this is choppy. Like, this is choppy here. And you're like, no, yeah, you were there and you know why it's choppy. It's because I took a sentence from here and put it here. And for three days, we tried to figure it out together. So the fact that you're telling me that it's choppy now is kind of a bummer. But, you know, you have to be able to deal with that kind of stuff. Like, you really have to know that that's a different kind of note. You know, the note from your comedian about pacing, that's the note that you really want to make sure you get right and you follow. And you want to get it right in your room so that it can go out to the next room so that it can go to the next room.
That's an interesting point. Both of those things are really interesting. And I think it's also an interesting note for people who haven't worked in like a TV environment before, that the notes from that network being sort of like saying, you didn't do this. And I've also heard the rule of like, that there is an idea that if you get the same note from a network twice, it's no longer a request.
Yeah.
The second time you get it, it's like, just shut up and do it.
I mean, like on a talk show level, like I just got off of Moshe Kasher's show Problematic, which was an awesome show. And Moshe's super amazing and was able to like bring out a lot about the these really insane concepts that you never think you'd be able to get a laugh about, like gun control, the alt-right, things like that. But Comedy Central had some pretty stringent ideas of what they wanted the show to be like. And at one point they were like, we need this to be like a lot funnier. And so like, it's like when you get a note from Comedy Central, it's like, yeah, it needs to be funnier. You're like, oh, word. Like we thought we were doing like the intellectual thing that like you wanted, you know what I mean? Like, so sometimes you get caught up in that kind of stuff and you get caught up in like how to please people and how to please the network. Because then the other thing is like, well, we made a show that was in motion, in the case of Motion Show, and I don't want to talk for the show period, but we made a show that was more intellectually stimulating than like laugh out loud funny like a Key and Peele would be, you know? So that's what you wanted and that's what you're getting. So now how we're going to change our show based on what the production note is, which like you said, is a mandate most of the time. And that happens like too with bigger networks a lot. Like you can push back on stuff like all the time, Viacom, basic cable, but it's like, I found like when I worked at NBC, it's like, if somebody says something about something you did and they want to change, it's like, you should probably change it and
make
keep your
change.
Job. Yeah. It's a good idea.
Well, your approach there, Ed.
Well, I think I don't have much more to add to that, except one thing I learned many years ago, both on like professional projects and personal projects. If my initial reaction to a note is that that's really annoying and I don't like that and I think it's bad, I found that a surprising amount of time I'll do the note and then realize it was an improvement. So I try not to trust my initial reaction to notes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the worst feeling. Like, you get this ping in your stomach where you're like, oh, I worked so hard on that. And I really liked it. Like,
but then it actually makes it better.
Uh-huh. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
You got to, like, have, like, a minute with the page of notes. Like, be like,
are you mad at
kidding me?
Yeah. Don't look at notes. Serious? Like, if you're out in public, you're, like, out with friends and stuff, don't look at your notes on your
phone.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, you ruin
yeah,
an
yeah.
evening.
That's like many Shake Shacks gone awry. It's like, looking at notes.
Waiting in line.
And also probably don't respond right away either.
Right. No, oh, let that's the see. Other. So you also have to learn. I'm sorry, this is really fun for me. It's the communication process, which is like, you. So you're the editor, so you are the most important person in the chair at the moment, but then it's like you sent a cutout to somebody who's literally doing a million other things that have nothing to do with your job at all, like whether it's like raising their child or, you know, going a fairway for something. And like sometimes they're looking at cuts in line at the supermarket and you're like going like, I can't believe that this is happening. But you just have to know that the professionalism is not both ways. Like the way that I treat editing is like when you come into my edit, it's like my space, but it's also your space. There's like a lot of shared, you know, there's like a lot of cohabitation kind of stuff. There's like a lot of like, I promise I'll never make you watch a cut in the middle of a supermarket line. But when it's not in your world, you have to also remember that your shit has to be super tight because people are looking at it in, you said, distracted circumstances.
You guys also spoke like a second ago about like making changes that you don't necessarily like want to make. Sort of like getting rid of the things that are painful, but that ultimately become a better choice there for the final product. Maybe walk through what learning to do that is or feels like. Killing the things that you love, either because especially if it's your own project, it's something that you felt was important in production or in the writing or in the sort of creative, you know, ideation of the thing. But then winding up in the edit saying, well, this is the final version people are going to see, so I need to rewrite it here. And learning to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think this is another thing that goes back to, does this shot, does this joke serve the mission? But there's other things too, like tone. You might be creating a show or a sketch that is less about the writing and more about the tone. Like Tim and Eric, sometimes there's no jokes in their shit. It's just craziness. And that's really important to establish from the beginning. Otherwise, what is it? You know, what is it that you're watching? And it's hard to find that balance of like too crazy and not enough crazy because you're cutting out too many things. So I think if it's not serving the mission, it has to at least be setting the tone. And I don't know. That's a tough one. It's because it's a balance depending on the project always, I think.
I'd say, like, if it's something that you believe in, like, you can fight for it all day long. It's just you have to have a good, hard reason. You know, like, there's got to be a lot to it if you're going to really stand on a hill for it, especially in your position, which is to excise things that don't work and to make it work, you know? And a lot of times, you do that yourself. You have a crazy idea. And, like, I tell people, too, like, I'm like, look, I've got this awesome idea. I think it's amazing. We're going to dial it down like three steps, but you have to let me blow it the fuck out for like 10 minutes. And then we're going to pull it back into something that is visually palatable, I guess you could say. But then it's like you definitely also have to remember that situational thing is something that you're always kind of working towards refining to get it right the first time as well. The idea of like how to kill your darlings or kill your babies, which is the way that they used to say it. And I like saying it that way because it's a hard choice. Yeah. You know, it's like you have to take things out that work. And when you do that and you do it right, you make something that hums along a lot nicer. And I always go back to sketch, but it's really the reason why I love music stuff so much and editing through music is because you can feel where the rests and the pulses go, and you could feel where people need to laugh. You could feel reaction shots and all of that kind of stuff. And so if you're doing that the right way, when you know something's wrong, even if it's gold, if it's like the funniest thing anyone's ever done, if it doesn't fit into that composition, you know right away it doesn't work. And then that's, it really makes like a, you're like, oh, I can't believe I didn't know to get rid of this immediately. You know, it's like, and it's freeing, which is nice.
I just remembered a really ridiculous example, and I'll try and make it quick. There's a little music video on UCB Comedy called Gouda Man, or Gouda Love, I believe. It's about the love between a woman and a wheel of Gouda cheese. it's a music video, and when we were making it a couple years ago, there was a shot where the woman is making out with a wheel of cheese, and then slowly it goes down and out of the screen and you're like, I know it's happening. And my friend who wrote it was like, I don't know, this seems gratuitous. And I was like, it's a woman making out with cheese. Like, we need more. Otherwise, people are going to be like, what the fuck is it? But so it was this big fight. It's like, do we show the cheese going down on the woman or is this too much? And I stood on a hill and I said, we need to show it. And then like just the other day, I saw him, and this video is now 2 years old, and he's like, I saw it the other day, and you know what's the best shot in that is when the cheese goes down on the woman. So I was like, yeah, in that situation, it was gratuitous for a reason, you know, that was serving it. So,
and you were in that capacity cutting that and trying having that conversation with somebody who was on a writing side.
Yeah, he was the writer, so he was also giving notes on the edit. Yeah.
So like fighting for things that are sort of like making that stand there.
Right, because that was an improvised moment on set. That wasn't something like, there was no script because it was a music video, yeah.
I have a little one like this too. It's like, so we did a sketch once on a show and the tagline was, please don't adopt. That was like the joke of the whole thing. Yeah. And so it got kicked back by the network and we found out that the standards and practices person was adopted. And that's the reason why. It's like the whole reason why. So, dude, now the dude who's in charge of her show, like, I probably, this is a bad story to tell. He's like, I'm going to handle this. And so he goes, and 2 days later, he's like, Nick, did you finish that sketch? It's in the show. And I'm like, how did you get it in the show? And he's like, well, I went into a meeting and I said, listen, I understand your fears about the adoption process. And I want you to know, like, I'm adopted also. I was also adopted and, you know, I find that it's not really that big of a deal to me. And I just want you to know that we do care about people. And like they had a talk and they got the thing on the air. And like, this dude was not adopted. Like, straight up, you know? So it's like, I bought it too. I was like, yo, you're adopted. He's like, they bounced. And I was like, oh dude, I can't. And just to make this like not just some dumb kayfabe story that I pulled out of nowhere, that's the idea, is that you also have to do that note thing with your superiors. You have to decide what you want in the show. Like there's like Amy Schumer, very famously, because Dan Powell, who's another big UCB dude who created the show with Amy, he like stood on a hill with Comedy Central to get a million words said. Like you couldn't, I'm pretty sure you couldn't say pussy on the air before the Amy Schumer show. And it's like, she was like, nope, we're saying it. Like you could say dick, you could say cock, whatever, we're saying it. And so it's like, went up to the high ranks and, you know, they did whatever alchemy they do to decide these things. And, you know, it came down and it was a good hill to stand on, you know, because it makes sense for the show.
Yeah. I imagine that's an even harder thing to be in a position like that was an editor, though. That's somebody who's doing it on a producing side at that level, right?
Right.
In the context of that.
Meaning it's harder to make decisions
To make a stand like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So macro. That's probably not something that's going to get determined in an edit.
I've had things where I've, like, done the stand up and, like, passionately argue. And a lot of times it's with my friends. You know, it's a lot of times it's with people. Like, I work on the Gethard Show, and it's like we're all friends for 4 million years. And we all know what the crowd wants, and we think we do. And so when it's like, no, I definitely want to make sure that this shot is in, like, I will passionately argue it to Chris. But I've also known Chris for 18 years or something. Yeah. It's like, I'm not going to do that with, like, Schumer or Abby, Alana, people like that. Like, that's not how you do that. I edited for Seinfeld once. It was like, whatever he said was, he thought he invented the short film. And we were just like, all right, cool, Seinfeld, like, peace. Like, you do you, man. Like, I got it. Like, whatever you want, I'll do it up. It's fine. It's fine. So, like, it just happens, whoever the person is that you're working with.
And are you a big take a stand guy or no?
I am not answering that question.
Shouldn't have.
Very good. Very good answer. Good answer. All right, cool. I think we have 10 minutes left. We could take some questions if you want to pull the lights up a little bit there. Hey, y'all. So if anybody has any questions about anything, right here.
Sure. I'd love to hear, when you're working on your own stuff, if there's a standard workflow, you've got a bunch of cuts from different shots, and so you sit down, you've got all your raw material. How do you, what's your workflow? Is there a standard way?
I'll reframe that for the podcast people who are listening to this at home. Is there a standard workflow you guys have when working on an edit?
Yes. Yes. The easiest way, I think, to answer that in just talking with a group is to be as organized as possible, to duplicate your sequences, your cuts, your projects on a daily basis, or as many times as you're making changes as possible. And I know that sounds very broad, but it's difficult to explain, like, the specific folder structure that I use. Before I was working professionally, you know, I had these hard drives with just a million files and all different names, and there were things saved on the desktop and in the downloads folder, and that can never, ever happen again. Otherwise, I'm not doing my job. Everything is in very disparate folders and organized and named very specifically and in subfolders. And I'd be happy to share a blanket version that I use with you. I'll give you my email address. I think, like, the easiest way to say it is to be as specific and organized as possible. Save your work. Every time you make even one change to a cut, duplicate it and rename it. Version 1, version 2, version 3. Date stamping is really big.
I'm a big fan of, my date stamping is 4-digit year, 2-digit month, 2-digit day, _ 4-digit military time. Because
that's intense,
it just makes a stack that is, like, perfect.
That's sick.
You never have any problems at all. Finding when in sequence something happened.
Go ahead, please.
No, I wasn't going to say
that. Oh, that was my bad. I was like, those are awesome organization things. I love that. I do a lot of times I like to do line by lines. Like, and my general note is, like, spend as much time with your footage as you can. Like, even if you're just, like, playing it in the background while you listen to music, or you just, like, just you want to feel it somehow. And then the other thing that one easy way to touch everything is to do line by lines, like, literally get every read of a line for a sketch and stack them, because you sort of start to find that you like certain takes better than others, but then you have everything as well. And I like to have everything line by line, because a lot of times directors are that exacting. So I like to be able to just go back to it. And sometimes markers can be used. I think that depending on what your style is, I'm talking about sketch, documentary, watching everything again, but you're doing, like, a lot more markers, you know, you're doing a lot more kind of explaining it to yourself so that you can remember it later rather than how you feel about it at the time. And then music is another thing that, like, I'll start with music. If it's a music thing, I always, always, always start with music, always. So those are my tips, I guess.
And also Avid is a little bit more foolproof in terms of literal file organization.
That's
right?
Correct.
You bring something in and Avid does the work to put it in the folder
right
where it needs to be, Whereas a tool like Premiere is like, I don't care where this file is. You could bring it in off of a CD.
Yeah, like Premiere is like finding the Clippy from Word and putting it in your thing. It's like, Avid is like a walled garden. So like, not to get back into this, because this is very inside and nerdy, but whatever. The thing that's amazing about Avid is that you can bring anything into it. And if Avid takes it, then you've got it. And Final Cut is like more of like, Final Cut 7, which is, won't even talk about Final Cut X. Like, there's like the same thing. It's scanning your drives. It's looking for all sorts of stuff. And it's making things a little bit harder to wrangle. So I guess to the point, like you said, you have a lot of organizational trees and things. Like I have that too. Like I have like a, and this is a big thing in the VFX world. I know Ed probably has templates as well. It's just like file structures that are dummy file structures that I just dump into things. Like I do, even with Avid, you can do it. And it makes your life a lot easier because you always know where you're going. Like I do a lot of sketches, so it's nice to know that this is where my cuts are and this is where all the music I use is, and like I'm always walking into the same garden.
Anything for you, Ed?
And nothing to add that these two didn't
is the same sort of like Adobe world where it doesn't care where it comes from.
That's true.
How much do you organize inside of the After Effects project file? Because I find After Effects can be a very chaotic like browser structure inside of an After Effects file. Do you organize it a lot or?
Yeah, I'll have a folder for the main compositions, pre-comps, any video, non-video assets. And that does make it easier to find things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not recommend not having some sort of theory for how you're going to organize your stuff inside an After Effects project.
Cool. Yeah.
Hi, my question is more of a panelist. Do you find any difference between editing live action as compared to animation?
Difference between live action editing and animation editing? I mean, Ed, you've done a lot of both.
I guess the main thing is when I've done animation, I edit the audio first before doing anything with visuals most of the time. So you're sort of editing a radio cut, and then it goes to whatever that next stage is going to be, whether the storyboards or if it's a very like low budget project that doesn't have a storyboard stage and you're moving directly into the animation. But it's a audio first, get the timing down, then do the animation, which is the really time consuming part. So you don't want to end up animating something that for the 20 seconds that ends up, you realize, this needed to be 2 seconds long.
I find that on animation projects, the sooner you get involved, the better, because it is audio almost 100% of the way. Like animation, the way that they make the shots, it's already been edited. The director's edited it for you. And so like I've worked on animated shows where I've been like, I want like another 12 frames of this so that I can get something to land better, you know? And then that choice has to go through the whole animation house. And like the owner of the place is like, so I heard you want another 12 frames. Like, what's the deal? I thought we had this, you know? And so like, you got to deal with that kind of stuff. So animation's hard. The earlier you can be involved in it, the better off you generally are.
Yeah.
I work with editors when I can trick them into.
So the question for those at home was the balance between a poignant cut and a comedic cut on a project that's very personal to you. And it's about the end of the world.
Or the end of a relationship.
The end of a relationship. Okay. Any advice on that balance between those two things?
I think it's knowing which parts you want to be sincere and which parts you want to be funny. And then thirdly, which parts you want to be funny in a sincere way. Because it sounds like there's probably all three in your piece. And being specific about those. It's hard to say without like seeing it, but sometimes the funniest things come out of moments that are so grounded and serious, and being okay with that. Being okay with a comedy piece where there is a whole 30 seconds that go by where it is very serious and sad, so that when you do hit the joke, it makes it all that much more worth it. I don't know if that helps, but yeah.
Honesty is like the best. Well, exactly. You have to ground whatever you're making in reality, whatever the reality of what you're making is, you know, could be the craziest thing of all time. But if it's grounded in that reality, then you have something that you could play off of for jokes. I've worked a lot with a lot of like, I mean, you know, the the emo, most emo comedians of all time. You know, like people who are like willing to like spread themselves wide open to kind of get to the joke and to get to something that's funny out of something that might be dark. And the way to do that is to just be very honest and upfront. And that's what'll make, like, I mean, I feel like I'm just repeating what you said, but that's what'll make things work.
The other thing that I'll add is I think that there's, like, there's a saying that is like the film isn't done. It's just that you move on to the next thing. I think that's also an important part of it, is that you might make the wrong choice in retrospect, but making that choice, finishing it, sharing it, seeing how that lands and how you feel about it as time goes by is also more valuable to getting the next thing right. And you're never going to give yourself that space unless you make a decision, call something the final cut, submit it to wherever you want it to be seen, screen it, and start the process over again. So there's an aspect of that when it comes to something personal that's like, take the reps, move on, kind of vibe.
Just real quick. I think it's also just like what you want to leave people with and what your arc is, especially when you're playing with sort of like, are you ending on a poignant note? Are you ending on like, is it ending in sort of a comedic way and sort of graphing out, not like literally, but just thinking about like what turns you want to take in the project. And so it's not just like you're bouncing back and forth between tones, but that there's actually a sense, not that there can't be, again, those like moments that blend between, but like, are you ending people with like a huh or with like a ha? That's an awful, don't, that was, I'm sorry, I just said that. But that kind of idea I think is important.
Speaking of finding the right tone to end things, we have time for one more. Yeah, right there in the back. So the question is there a difference between a great sizzle editor and a great story editor?
Yes. There are like sizzle editors, trailer editors are like, they're amazing. You know, they're very world-renowned people, some of them that do those things. And you definitely have to have the right person looking at it, especially for a series. And especially you have to think about what... I'm thinking about sizzles that I've done. Like, you know, there's like ones where there are like a lot of guest stars in it because you want to get the guest stars in it. And then there are ones where all the funny parts are in it because you want to show that the show is funny. And then there are ones that are like a proof of concept. And that is why you get somebody who's like trained in how to do it, to do it.
I think that's definitely the ideal case. But I know having done an NYTVF pilot and being self-funded and stuff before, there are those wonderful people out there who are good at many different things. So it's possible that, you know, the first person you worked with, you weren't able to get the product you wanted. But there might be a very hungry, greener editor out there who maybe has a background in something like music video or whatever, who's a little bit more at pacing and, you know, sound bites and things. And to Nick's point, I think part of that is just experience. So it's not always about like a different kind of editor, but just an editor with more experience in something like sizzle. Maybe they've also done doc and, you know, things like that. But I think watch a lot of sizzles, watch a lot of trailers, and then be like, this is what I want and this is why. And that's like a good way to talk with an editor who's maybe not as experienced and just be like, let's try and mimic the pacing and the music of this trailer. It's a good place to start.
Yeah, music video people, definitely. That's a really good point.
And that will do it for episode number 48 of this podcast. Thanks to Ian, Emily, Aaron, and Terrence, the whole gang from the New York Television Festival, for asking us so nicely to participate in this event and putting it together. Of course, y'all out there, if you are submitting to NYTVF, get those applications in by June the 28th. And you can find out all the information about that on their website, nytvf.com. Thanks to Nick, Tessa, and Ed, and Ian as well for sitting in on this panel. And thanks to you out there for joining us. If you like this show, if it has value to your work as a creative and a filmmaker, the nicest thing you could do is subscribe on iTunes and leave us a rating and a review as well. We always appreciate it. You can connect with us on Twitter and Facebook at UCB Digital and with UCB Comedy, who's got new videos coming out all the time, all over all the platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Vimeo. You can find all that at UCB Comedy. And thank you to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Pick up a Bronx the next time you're down at the UCB East Bar, or go to thebronxbrewery.com for all the information about their craft beer selections. We will be back next week with another new episode. And until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.